As we get older, it's important to do all we can to keep our bodies in prime condition. Stay tuned on this episode of The One in Five as Dr. Hansen and I continue our discussion of the aging body. Hey y'all, welcome to The One in Five, the show for those who want to know how to be healthy, how to stay healthy, and how to promote health in your community. I'm your host, Adam Renshaw, and in today's show, we have Dr. Oren Hansen with us, and we're going to be talking about common health issues people deal with as they get older. This is part two in our Aging in the Body series. And in this episode, we are going to be specifically talking about what happens to our brains, eyes, and ears as we age. And I would just start by saying, Dr. Hansen, welcome back. Thank you for being willing to come on here and talk to me about our aging bodies one more time.
Woo! It's good to be back, man.
It's going to be hopefully a couple more times after this because we still have a lengthy list. But
yeah, appreciate
you, yeah, man. Appreciate you being back. Well, dude, let's just roll in. Brain health. Talk to me about the brain as we age. Talk to me about some of the things that happen to our brains as we get older.
The brain, and leading from our last one, kind of just going through these different organ systems, if you want to talk about the order of importance, we're kind of doing this wrong because we should, if that were the case, we'd have already talked about brain. Maybe
would that be number
maybe
one?
Maybe it might be numero uno. It might be proud to know that it is.
Sure. Okay. Number two.
We talked about cardiovascular health.
The cardiovascular system.
This stuff works together. You got to have good blood flow to get to the brain, and we're going to talk about how lack of blood flow can lead to disease in the brain, and in some cases. So, ultimately, the brain is, and honestly, we could take this back to our executive our discussion. Comparing this to an automobile.
Sure, please do.
Because the brain is kind of the executive decision maker behind everything that's going on. And I'm trying to, old-fashioned automobiles, maybe this doesn't work quite as well, but right now you have a computer.
I was out running earlier and I was thinking about this show and I was thinking, so if we're continuing this analogy of the automobile and likening our bodies to the cars that we were talking about on the last episode, what would the brain be? And that's what came to my mind. Everything these days is run by a computer, right?
I guess there was a time in our life where our human brain didn't have the level of functioning that it currently does.
Sure.
And our abilities weren't nearly what they are. And now that we have automobiles with a computer or a brain, they can start themselves without you being there.
Sure.
They can drive themselves without you putting your hands on the steering wheel. And so in some ways, yeah, you're right. The vehicles that we're seeing now are developing a brain that functions a similar way that our brain functions. So I don't know, maybe just a little background on getting into this brain anatomy and physiology. One thing I don't think a lot of people know is how the brain develops. And we kind of started about on that earlier and all the protective mechanisms that are in place with our immune systems and telomeres that protect our chromosomes from developing things like disease and illness.
And the telomeres, real quick, those are those little capsules on the end of the chromosomes?
Yep, exactly.
Or the DNA?
Yep, okay. The chromosomes where the DNA is housed and kept safe. And as long as you have healthy caps covering those, then you don't have problems when that DNA goes to replicate and make new cells that go to different parts of your body. So from the moment we're born, our brain is starting to develop. It's one of the earliest things that does start to develop. And as we mature, if we're nurturing it properly, like we may have talked about in other podcasts and probably we'll touch on in this one, the brain gets excellent blood flow. The the cells between the in the brain, they make good connections that help us form memories. It helps us control our immune system. It helps regulate our mood and our emotions. There's several different parts of the brain, and they help us do different things. And the two that I kind of been thinking about most recently in my practice are kind of the brainstem and the frontal lobe.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a lot of pieces in between there. The brainstem sits in the back by your spinal cord. The frontal lobe is the part of your brain that would be, you know, right behind your eyes and right behind your forehead.
Okay.
But they're responsible for very different things. And I think for the rest of the discussion, it's important to kind of highlight their different roles. The brainstem is something we have in common with, I think, at least most other mammals. And some may even say a lot of other what are called vertebrates, where it's any animal that has basically a spinal cord.
Okay. Does it connect our brain to the spinal cord?
It connects our brain to our body, yeah.
Okay.
The spinal cord and its contents basically allow us to do very basic human things that we don't have to think about. You don't have to think about breathing. You don't have to try to remember to breathe. You don't have to set an alarm to breathe. Sometimes it's helpful to do things like that, but for the most part, our brainstem should control that for us. Same with our heartbeat. Same with...
What about blinking?
Is
that
bowels.
Involuntary?
It is involuntary. I mean, it's a voluntary act as well, but if we were responsible for lubricating the surface of our eye with blinking, we would have, many of us would have eye disease. So thankfully, I can't for sure say that that's from the brainstem, but a lot of these basic things that we do to keep our bodies healthy without having to think about it, that kind of comes from the brainstem. And even in my patients, I've been calling this caveman thinking, because this is where basically all of our primitive urges come from too. And sometimes people will even have strokes that affect other parts of their brain, but they still are able to go on, their body's able to go on, you know, surviving because the brain stem has been spared.
Wow.
But this is all opposed to the frontal lobe. And the frontal lobe is thought to be, on average within populations, be fully developed around age 25. And the frontal lobe is the part of the brain opposite of doing what the spinal cord does. This is the highest level thinking that we can try to develop as human beings.
Decision-making, problem-solving.
This is complex decision-making. Okay. This is taking multiple factors and variables, putting them together so that we can kind of come up with the complete picture. This is thinking about how my actions today are not only going to affect me tomorrow, mm-hmm. but in 10, 25, 50 years. And it's also involved in kind of our impulse regulation too, and maybe that is somehow related to how we plan for the future and how we need to modify our behavior so that it is socially acceptable, so that our bodies and our brains can function in a way that is supported by the society that we live in.
You know, my wife's been reading this book about the teenage brain. And it talks a lot about this, particularly that frontal lobe. So I haven't read the book, disclaimer. So I don't actually know what's in it, but I know things that she's told me. And they really highlight the importance of this piece. And as a teenager, making sure that you're not doing things like using drugs and alcohol, because the brain is still developing and these things affect that frontal lobe and can cause massive issues later on in life because it's not fully developed until, like you said, 25, right?
And I think there is a lot of unknown still left in that, but what we do know is that the brain is still trying to become its mature self, and it takes into the mid-20s. So, yeah, if you're able to eliminate variables like drugs, even, you know, medications in some instances, other poor habits that have negative health outcomes. We want to avoid all that stuff, especially in the developing years, so that we can give that brain the best chance of reaching its full potential.
Okay.
It doesn't make good sense to me, honestly, why a lot of things like drugs or legal drugs that you can buy are at age 21 when I've been taught that that really making those decisions should be at, you know, age 25.
Interesting.
But I don't make the laws, and I don't think all the laws are based on what's best for the overall health of our society.
Maybe we have Orrin Hansen, Dr. Orrin Hansen, new Surgeon General, huh?
Our Surgeon General is really good right now. And maybe I can, if we can get on the topic, I can quote him later.
Awesome. So the brain's developing up until 25. We have the brain stem, we have the frontal lobe. So we've created some background there. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that could maybe affect the frontal lobe or the brainstem as we get older.
A variety of different things, and I didn't come prepared to discuss them in any particular order. I guess maybe the meat of this discussion could even fall on a real big topic within aging and the brain, which is dementia.
Sure, sure.
You know, prior to that, we always want to. There's conditions that aren't necessarily exclusive to the aged population. You can have strokes when you're a young person. They happen more frequently as we get older due to the effects that our age can have on our cardiovascular system. And I'll refer people to our other podcast
That's right.
You know, to learn more about how those problems can occur. Again, if you don't have good blood flow to a certain part of your brain, sometimes if it's so severe, you can even lose that part of your brain, the cells that were helping whatever part of the brain help your body function, if those die, then you might be lost with that ability forever unless you can create other ways, you know, to still have that function.
Sure.
So stroke, you know, going along with that cardiovascular topic, it is a major cause of morbidity and mortality in this country. We have to talk about it just a little bit because of that. But again,
please do, because I think it's interesting. My mom recently had a mild stroke, and they were able to actually pinpoint an artery that was clogged that probably caused the stroke. And I don't know like all of the details about it, but it was in the back of her head, her neck area, but that's not where it originated, right? It originated probably in the cardiovascular system. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And so we can maybe even define stroke. It'd be helpful for people to hear, but a stroke is basically lack of blood flow to the brain. Most of the time in this country, at least, it's caused by a blood clot traveling through an artery. And arteries lead from the heart to wherever organ they're delivering. So when you mention it could have originated in the cardiovascular system, a lot of times blood clots can start in people who have something called AFib, and a clot can start in their heart, and then that gets pumped to their body into their brain, where it gets lodged and it obstructs the blood flow to that part of the brain.
Interesting.
When this happens, very clear symptoms start to happen. And there's different degrees of severity.
Like?
For the most part, you're going to have a neurologic deficit. And what we mean by that is you're going to have a problem with your nervous system, whether it's the nerves that help you move or the nerves that help you feel things or the nerves that help you smell things or the nerves that help your balance. There's going to be something that changed, and the doctors are going to be curious in having and asking those questions. Is your movement affected? Is your sensation affected? If that's coupled with something like a really bad headache,
okay,
because losing blood flow is also very painful, and it's kind of, I think it's our body's way of saying, hey, something's going on. We need to try to fix this. We have the technology now that if we can seek proper care, there's both medicines and surgical, and minimally invasive surgical procedures that allow us to intervene before that clot has blocked off blood flow for too long to where it causes irreversible death of the cells.
Okay.
If you can act quick enough, a lot of times people can preserve that function and still be able to do with their brain and body what they want to do. But I think it's important for people to be aware of the signs and symptoms of stroke so that if they're having symptoms like that, they can seek care appropriately and maybe get life-saving treatment.
So one time I had Bell's palsy and I had like a paralysis on mm-hmm. a side of my face. Mm-hmm.
And I know that one.
I was working here and it was back when it was in when the clinic was right here where we're meeting sure. right now. And our bullpen was over in the front part of the building and we all shared an office. It was all of us, providers, me, nurses, everybody. And Julie walks in, Julie Poole walks in. And she starts talking to me. I'm sitting at my desk. I was doing some work and I looked up at her and she kind of like cocks her head at me. And she says, are you just winking at me or are you having a stroke right now, Adam? Oh. And I was like, thank God for like a nurse who.
Neither. Let's be clear.
I had already gone through the process and somebody had figured it out, right, of what was going on. So I was able to tell her, no, I got Bell's palsy right now and I'm still dealing with some of that paralysis on the right side of the face.
You could have messed with her so bad.
But that's one of the symptoms of stroke, right, is maybe a paralysis on a certain part of the body.
Yep, that's the same as losing the ability to move in an arm or a leg. You just lost the ability to move your eyebrow and maybe your eyelid, it sounds like.
Yeah. My smile. Mm-hmm, like only one side of my face would smile and the other side just kind of stayed the same. So I had this crooked smile.
And again, with stroke, and people have come with strokes that I've seen in the emergency department or hospital, and they wake up and look in the mirror, and their face doesn't look like it usually does.
Oh my goodness!
Those are great signs to look for. People generally know their bodies very well. It's when we start to ignore the signals that our body's giving us. So hopefully, people who ever had the misfortune of having to deal with these would then recall on hearing some of these symptoms and know that it's something to be taken seriously.
So that's some of what the stroke can do to our bodies. And that could be permanent damage, you said.
Yeah.
It is permanent damage,
in many cases, it's permanent damage. Or it can be sometimes damage that can be rehabilitated through a lot of work.
Okay. So that's a part of the brain that can literally affect many other parts of the body. Like you have a stroke, the stroke happens, right? Originates here.
It's the computer.
Yeah.
If you mess with the computer, who knows what's the governing or the executive system, who knows what's going to cause, what kind of downstream effects you might be dealing with.
Well, we started with dementia, right? And that's more in the cognitive realm. Would that be a safe way to put that?
Yep. And again, strokes can cause cognitive function, and maybe this is a nice way to even transition, because there's kinds of dementia that are related specifically to blood flow and losing blood flow. So if you want, we can...
Yeah,
we can
talk to me about some of these types of dementia which fit into this cognitive realm of the brain.
So to think about dementia as a whole, the way I kind of classify it when I see folks that I'm worried about with dementia is some very classic symptoms that, like you mentioned, are related to their cognition. It's memory. It's thinking about complex problems. It's mood regulation. And this is certainly a disease that correlates with age for many individuals. So if you have these things happening in an elderly person, your suspicion for something like dementia should be raised. There are several different kinds of dementia, and it starts to get a little bit complex and maybe even, dare I say it, a little bit useless or meaningless, because there are not good treatments for dementia. And the treatments for dementia that we do have, that have been shown to help, are fairly universal amongst all the different types of dementia. Okay. And they have a lot to do with supportive care and preventative care and trying to make sure that, that folks with dementia don't develop other conditions or other injuries.
Okay. What are some of the other injuries that people could develop as a result of dementia?
Well, just the downstream effects of maybe getting lost and getting into an accident, being on too many medications, not knowing how to manage them, taking them improperly, then having side effects that then lead you to getting into some kind of accident. There's probably a million other examples.
Sure, sure.
And it's all the more reason to have an increased kind of surveillance and support system for people who develop these. The most common types of dementia that people all often hear about, have you heard of old-timers dementia?
They call it Alzheimer's, right?
I'm pretty old-timers. Sure it's old-timers. Yeah. I think that's old-timers is the scientific term that... I'm kidding.
They're pretty interchangeable, right?
I think where I came from, everyone called it old-timers. Right. I think that terminology led to some misclassification, misdiagnosis with other more common, with other very common types of dementia. And the two that I'll probably spend some time visiting about is are two called vascular dementia and Lewy body dementia.
Okay.
There's also one called frontotemporal dementia that's more of it's kind of like a neuropsychiatric condition, I believe, that is really specialized. And I honestly don't know much about managing frontotemporal dementia. And that might not even be as, and again, forgive me, anyone who I might not be correct on this, but I don't think that that's as age dependent. Whereas you see, you know, increases in Alzheimer's, Lewy body, and vascular in an aging population.
Okay. So Alzheimer's isn't one of these other two that you mentioned, Lewy body or vascular dementia. It's its own separate type.
It's separate.
Okay.
And if we wanted to tie it back to our automobile analogy, it's kind of with the Alzheimer's and with the Lewy body, those are almost an abnormal buildup of byproducts that we don't want in our brain. Without getting too specific and without exposing myself as not, you know, remembering properly the names of these proteins, there's things like these amyloid proteins that basically, I can't even recall what they're a byproduct of, but you can get buildups and deposits of those in our brain, and that affects the essentially the function of the cells in the brain.
Okay.
And so you start to develop these cognitive impairments. And it's usually very slow because the accumulation of these proteins and these deposits happens over people's lifetimes.
Would people call those plaques?
Plaques, yep, exactly. Okay. Yep. Okay. That's a good term that they use for, I think it's just the accumulation of all these different proteins.
Okay. Talk to me about some of these mild cognitive impairments that you just alluded to there, because I think we'll just stay high level on this, right? And what we want to give people here is some things to look out for. Mm-hmm. So you have an aging parent, or an aging person in your life, doesn't even have to be a relative, but you start seeing things. What are some of those things that we're going to start to see that might cause us to say, like someone I know, they get words confused. They'll say this word when it's actually this word that makes sense in the context, right? And that seems really minor, but is that one of those things?
Maybe, certainly. Could be. You know, the other thing is a lot of these symptoms are the same symptoms people get when they're drunk or sleep deprived or anything else that impairs the functioning of the brain. So you really have to take the whole picture together. I think one of the first biggest clues is looking at a family history and saying, you know, do these things run in your family? Did your parents have this? Because then your suspicions may be already a little bit heightened and you say, well, maybe I want to avoid things or avoid taking medicine that may increase my chances of dementia, whatever kind of dementia it might be, if I have a family history of dementia. Okay. Maybe I'll try to manage my life another way than, you know, or doing these other things that might be risk factors for dementia, like smoking, drinking, poorly controlled sugars, sleep apnea, etc.
Okay. So we got Alzheimer's, we got Lewy body, we got vascular dementia. Talk to me about some of the differences between some of those.
I think that the effects are going to be very much the same. And to go back from what we were just talking about, it, really anything that makes you say, wow, this person is not acting normally. Okay. They used to be able to remember my name, and now they don't remember my name. They used to remember the car that I drove, or they used to wake themselves up and dress themselves, and now they're putting their shoes on, you know, different feet, or wearing clothes that weren't, you know, haven't been popular in, you know, years. Or it's these little subtle behaviors, and it comes on subtly and gradually. So I think it's hard for families to appreciate some of these changes, especially if they're living with them. Unfortunately, many of these cases are diagnosed too late, where people have gotten into an accident and you say, well, why were you driving in the first place if you were lost? And maybe this family member doesn't have the resources so that they can be supported and be monitored. It's kind of hard. It isn't certainly nothing sudden like a stroke would be, where you go from functional to not functional.
Yeah,
gradual change. And the same is for Lewy body and vascular dementia. Lewy body, I'll kind of just compare that with Alzheimer's. I'll lump it together because, again, I think it's a buildup of different plaques and proteins that are different from Alzheimer's, but I think the effects are very similar, and the treatments for either of them are minimal, negligible, and arguably may not have any outcome on the eventual disease course.
Okay.
Vascular dementia relates to the blood vessels and how the blood flow into the brain or lack thereof can lead to these same cognitive deficits in memory, executive functioning, higher level decision making, organizational skills, etc. And to be honest, we started off this visit, and I don't know, I'm kind of bouncing around. We're talking about symptoms and pathology, but we started off this visit talking about development of the frontal lobe and how we kind of get full development and full functioning of the frontal lobe in our mid-20s, where we can make long-term decisions. We can think about multiple complex things at once, and we can organize, especially if this is a perfectly supported brain. These are the things we also start to lose when
we get older.
Some of these dementia cases happen. I don't know if it's predominantly in the frontal lobe, but it seems like a lot of dementia, it leads to deficits in those types of activities. So if that's a simpler way to think about it for people, maybe that's a good illustration.
It sounds really complex. So I think one of the things that I'm pulling out from this is the importance of preventive care, the importance of sort of regular visits with your doctor. Family history, you highlighted as something being very important. So being aware of your family history, right? We'll need to know that to start with. And then just having a community around us to where, you know, people can notice things that maybe seem a little off or a little not, and go from there. So would you just share some strategies for maintaining the most optimal cognitive health that we can as we get older and older?
Yeah. I would mostly try to prevent vascular dementia. Vascular dementia is the lack of the blood flow due to buildup of cholesterol, chronic high blood pressure, chronic diabetes that causes the blood vessels to get very narrow, and now you're not getting good blood flow to the different parts of the brain that allow it to stay healthy and high functioning and robust. So let's try to optimize all that stuff. Let's control your blood sugars. Let's control your blood pressure. Let's make sure you got a healthy diet, so you have a healthy level of cholesterol. Let's make sure that you're getting good oxygen to your brain when you're sleeping at night, and you don't have something like sleep apnea, and the blood vessels are having to then change. the reason I say all this is because blood flow to any organ is basically going to be a good thing. The blood, even the plaques and the proteins and all the things that we're talking about with Alzheimer's and Lewy body dementia, those things get cleaned out when we get good blood flow to our brain, because our body has our blood flow has our immune system in it, and this immune system is going through our body looking for problems to fix. If we don't have good blood flow to the brain, it's not going to fix those problems effectively.
Gotcha.
So yeah, those type of lifestyle measures, I think, is really where we have to focus, and it's.
Dude, it's the same as everything, right?
Yep, it's the true for everything.
Man, it's just such a trip, and it kind of bugs me a little bit, I'm going to be honest with you, that it just keeps coming back to this, right? Because, well, I mean, these are issues that are just so common with people, and, you know, we all deal with this stuff, and it just highlights the importance, like, of do you want to live long? Do you want to be healthy? The longer you live, these are things that need to be taken care of now. I just don't want to hear it, man. Like, from the perspective of, I just want to like live my life and eat what I want to eat and do my thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not that cut and dry.
It's certainly not. Nor is it 100% going to be due to those things, because there are genetic variability, you know, genetic factors that make us all different. And there's things that, there's ways that, you know, the environment affects the way our genes are expressed, and that's called epigenetics. There's, there's other environmental exposures. There's so many variables that can influence, you know, disease, but there is one that we have control
of. That's what I was just going
to
say.
And that's kind of why I like to talk about it, because at least that's something that we can do something about.
It's huge. I mean, we all want to feel empowered, right?
And I'll even say that... Sometimes when we tell people, you know, there's a fancy medicine or this or that that you can take when you get dementia, that kind of becomes an excuse for people then not to address the things that they really need to. They say, I can just use that pill. The problem with when it comes to dementia, we don't have good pills that work. There are some pills that are studied specifically for Alzheimer's dementia. But to diagnose Alzheimer's dementia, you have to do a lot of expensive tests on people who... It's not going to change how you're doing anything. So many of these cases might not be Alzheimer's or old timers or Lewy body. We don't really know.
Okay.
There's no point in putting all those resources there to try to figure it out. We just have to do what we can to be in control, which is the lifestyle stuff. The medicines out there don't have good evidence behind curbing the course of the disease.
Sure. Sure. Well, let's shift.
Let's do it.
Let's shift over to the eyes and the ears. Let's just stay high level. You know, let me just start with this. Let's start with the eyes, okay?
We're not really shifting, by the way.
Okay.
Both of those things are kind of extensions of our
brain. Okay.
Yeah, even the especially the eyes, I think, is how we kind of think about it. But
nice.
Yeah.
I'm getting older, and I have never had to wear glasses in my life, and all of a sudden, I gotta wear glasses. What the heck, man? Why?
Are they the readers, the cheaters?
Yeah, I got the readers. Yeah, and it's minor, but you know, I ignored it for a really long time, and I was getting headaches, and it was starting to get really bad to where I'm like, okay, no, I just gotta have glasses now. So, and it's nearsighted, or wait.
What? You know, I would get confused by this, and I, as I prefaced before getting into this visit, the fact that we have optometrist, audiologist, and dentist means that when you go to medical school, they don't teach you a whole lot about the eye, the ear, or the teeth, respectively.
Sure. Okay. Yep.
So even their terminology, like farsighted and nearsighted, is not really stuff we spend a lot of time learning. What you were describing is a very common phenomenon related to aging of the eye that's called presbyopia, I believe.
That's right.
And I think it just has to do with kind of the lack of flexibility of the lens, your lens, and then it makes it hard for you to focus on things that are really close to your face.
Okay.
So if that's nearsightedness, then
that's farsightedness, actually. Okay. Sorry, I got that wrong. That was my bad.
So you should still be able to see in the notes here. In the distance.
I can see in the distance just fine. It's just up close that I can't see. So that's called farsightedness. If I was able to see closer and not see far away, that would be nearsightedness.
Just because I'm not going to know as much about the next topics in the eye, I want to just make a quick correlation with from presbyopia to presbycusis, which is age-related hearing loss.
Okay.
And it's also like presbyopia or age-related vision loss. They're slow, gradual problems. And so without me getting into a whole lot more about it, I kind of say you should be screened by basically optometrists, audiologists, if you're concerned about deficits in any of these things, because they're going to be the people who get you into that treatment. And not having those things, it's like not having blinkers and window fluid on your in your car. I mean, you're kind of without direction. You're kind of acting independently. You're not able to really use the information from the environment around you to then try to survive in that environment. It makes you susceptible to illness and disease.
Okay. I appreciate where you're going with this, because what we want to do is we want to give our listeners, we want to equip them with what they can do to try to figure this stuff out, right? Mm-hmm. So this probably isn't in the primary care realm. This is more in the specialized realm. If they came to a primary care physician with eye issues, you would do sort of a cursory exam maybe, and then you would say, hey, I'd like to set you up with a optometrist or a vision specialist.
Yeah, that's often the case. But like sports physicals, we start checking people's eyes, and that's a good screening test. I couldn't tell you if that's a validated screening test. But I do think it's important. And as someone who wears glasses, who grew up in a rural area without access to eye screening tests, I didn't start wearing glasses until I was 26, 27, and I probably should have been wearing them for at least 5, maybe 10 years before that.
Really? What kind of impact did that have on you before, and you not realizing, right? Like, what was that like? Because deep in college during this period.
I probably would be one of the world's leading neurosurgeons at this point if I would have been able to read during medical school. But, I was only good enough to get... No, I'm kidding.
You specifically chose primary care. You shared this story.
If I would have had 20/10 vision, I'd be a real family doctor.
Sure.
But I think I may have been a college three-point or basketball player. My three-point shot would have been a lot better in high school if I could have seen the rim from that distance. So I might not be a physician altogether.
You were throwing up prayers every time, huh?
Well, I couldn't understand.
It was like
I had everything else correct. It was just the aim. I didn't understand why I missed it.
With Philip Seymour Hoffman, where he's like out there playing basketball, and he's like, no look, and go swish. But no, it didn't really go in. You were doing all no looks, huh?
That had Ben Stiller in it.
That's
too.
Right. It's like there's something about Mary. Polly. Oh, that's it.
That's what it was.
Nice. I can't believe you remember that. Nice, man.
That was back in the days where we watched movies over and over again.
I know, huh? So you were doing the no look all of the time, huh? Like inadvertent no look three pointers. Because you just couldn't see the rim. So.
No, I saw the rim. I saw where I thought it was. I was just always confused when the ball didn't go through.
Okay. So then I got a couple more questions related to eyes and ears. One was, I read an article recently about a correlation between hearing loss and the onset of certain types of dementia. Is there any validity to those claims? And what they sort of explained was hearing loss, as we get older, pushes us more out of community and social circles, right? And so that lack of community and interaction with other human beings, they were saying they could make a correlation between that and some of the dementia issues. So I don't know.
That's fascinating to think about.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know anything about the good data that supports a clear connection with that. That being said, there's all kinds of data that says that when you're socially withdrawn, disease states are fueled.
Okay.
Because that's such an integral part of our existence is being around community and family and social structures. That's just the type of mammals that we are.
Sure.
Without quoting any particular study, I think that that makes total sense to me.
Okay.
Whether one causes the other, I don't know. You might even be having things like mini strokes or problems with vascular dementia where you're getting lack of blood flow to, auditory centers that at the same time you're getting lack of blood flow to cognitive centers.
Interesting.
And some of those things could be coincidental. The reality is that the prevalence of dementia is so high and the prevalence of hearing loss is so high that it would be I think it'd be really hard to study any kind of direct connection between them. There's just so many, and then there's so many variables that can influence either or both of them. But
sure.
I can tell you that that is the reason that we need to take care of our ears, because it fosters socialization. It it fosters learning. It fosters an ongoing sense of purpose, because we're engaged with the world. And I think there is a pretty strong pattern of people becoming withdrawn when they're not able to hear or see the people that they're around.
You know, people have always asked me, you ever play the whole would you rather, would you rather lose your eyesight or lose your hearing, right? And that's such a tough one, right? Oh,
so hard.
But for me, I play music and I love music. Mm-hmm. And so
I
typically always said I'd probably rather lose my visual sensation than my hearing, because that's been such an important part of my life for such a long time.
Right.
So hearing has risen to the top as one of the more important senses in my life, but
right. And allows for communication too. As a music lover as well. I equally love effective communication in the English language when spoken and heard with proper ability to do so. You solve a lot of problems, sure. And a lot of heartache and
relational stuff.
Yeah, just disagreements through. Actually, I think that all of the world's problems come down to a deficiency in communication around any particular issue.
We're not hearing each other. We're not listening, huh? That's a little off into the sort of more of the emotional realm, huh? And not the scientific realm. That's right.
So they're the same. They're the same, man.
Sure. Well, what I just want you to do before we close here is just give us some tips on how to maintain optimum eye and ear health as we get older, man. Talk to me. Are there any vitamins or are there any nutrients that those organs need more than others? Or
there are some in some instances. I think, we always talk about vitamin A and eating your carrots for your vision.
Sure.
Yeah. Everything that your eyes and your ears need are the same thing that the rest of your body needs. And those vitamins and nutrients are going to be found if you can have a well-balanced diet that's mostly plants and some animal protein and fat as well. And if you want to talk about optimal brain and eye and nerve function, some of the best animal protein and fat that you can get comes from fish. There's been really good studies about the omega-3s and it might be something else. It's the type of oil that you find in fish. There's really helpful benefits, cardiovascular and I think cerebrovascular, meaning the brain, how the brain relates to the blood flow on those fish oils. That being said, I don't think there's a lot of good evidence that It comes from supplementing fish oil. So just taking extra fish oil to try to increase your chances of optimizing your brain health. It seems like the data comes more from the whole food of the fish rather than just eating the extracted oil.
And fish oil just makes you burp those fishy.
It has some uncomfortable side effects that might lead to non-compliance in the future. So if you're going to do something, you should do something that you can do sustainably. You know, the rest of the vitamins, without it saying anything specifically, if you lack that balanced diet with mostly plants and animals and fish, I would get a simple over-the-counter multivitamin and really not try to get too many other vitamins. I see a lot of people, they'll take a multivitamin, but they take 10 other vitamins, but it's because they hadn't looked at the ingredients on the multivitamin, and all of the 10 other vitamins are in
that multi.
Okay. And anything that we don't absorb into our body because we've already reached capacity, our kidneys filter out into our bladder, which then gets excreted as urine. And if you could then somehow concentrate those vitamins again and repackage them and sell them, you might be able to make hundreds of dollars.
Does that like affect the color of
sometimes? Sometimes,
brighter. More fluorescent.
It's probably not natural. So those are the vitamins and nutrients. I would say sleep.
Sleep.
We can't close this without talking about sleep. A lot of the remodeling that happens to reinforce connections in our brain that help with memories, help with mood regulation and impulse control, help with pain control and pain regulation, and help with our immune system. A lot of that health comes when we're sleeping properly. Unfortunately, we live in a culture that doesn't value sleep because it's not consistent with working a whole lot. The reason I want to place such an emphasis on it is because I think sleep's just been chronically undervalued in our society. I think that we used to sleep a whole lot more before we started making a lot of money off of having people come and work for us all day and night if we could get them to do it. And when you have that kind of society and you put that kind of pressure on society, they're going to be, well, and for many other variables, they're going to have ulterior motives for not getting the right amount of sleep, even though their bodies and their brains are still tired.
Sure.
Being able to protect that so that our bodies can recover and heal and prevent illness, I think, is critically important. And just can't be underestimated and undervalued. It's really hard to come by because sleep can be interfered by things like anxiety. And I think I told you I wanted a quote from our Surgeon General, in this country. I forget his name. I mean, I think his first name is Vivek. Okay. He's an internal medicine physician. And he was recently quoted saying that there's a pandemic of loneliness in this country.
Sure.
And like we talked about, by not having your vision or your hearing, how that can be very isolating and then fuel disease. So can things like that. And they can also affect sleep. And we really need to be thinking deeper about how our emotions are really science and how they connect with the real science of our physical body as well. Rather than saying, just take a pill, toughen up, sure, you're going to be fine. This is something that, you know, can be fixed by modern medicine. I think we have to take this into our own hands if we really want to curb the outcomes of some of these diseases.
You know, I really appreciate these reminders. And once again, like, we're talking about brain, we're talking about ears, we're talking about eyes here, but we also talked about bones, joints, and cardiovascular system on the previous one. And what we're seeing is that a lot of what you're saying here is carryover from what we talked about before with those other systems. So we're starting
to see power in your vehicle.
Yeah, we're starting to see these themes here. And I really appreciate the reminders of that. Sleep being important, right? Blood pressure, cholesterol.
The fuel that we put into our bodies to help these processes.
I acted annoyed, you know, earlier out here in the same old things, you know. But I think, you know, that reveals sort of where we're at, is that these are the things, and we all want to feel empowered. I alluded to that earlier too, to be able to say, I have a stake in this. What are some things that I can do to help myself in this process rather than being reliant upon others? And so I appreciate you coming in and sharing some of this information to where we can be empowered to do some of these things that are going to lead to a more healthy lifestyle and things as we get older. So I appreciate that again, hey, Dr.
Thanks
Hanson.
For the platform. You ask the greatest questions to try to share that stuff.
Oh, it's awesome. So we'll start working on part three of this, which will be more systems and the aging body. Okay. We'll do that. And then just as we're closing, I would just like to thank all of our listeners for tuning into this part two series on aging. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go back and do that. I'll put a link in the description. And if you found this information valuable, would you give us a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice and share this with someone who you think would benefit from this information? Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for having me, man.